Good morning and welcome back, or I should say, I'm glad to be back. It is Wednesday, November the 13th. Our last show was last week. We were hoping to get some shows done while I was away in Amsterdam. Unfortunately, didn't happen, and then got sick, still trying to get over it, so pardon that today, but happy to be back anyway, taking my time trying to get back on the air. I didn't want you to have to listen to a cough fest for an hour every day, and so we are battling that cold and trying to get back on the up and up. We'll get there shortly, but welcome back. Thanks for your patience and for tuning into the show this morning. A lot of stuff has happened in the last week and a half. First thing off the top, I think we should mention and get to is the U.S. women's national team were successful in filing their lawsuit as a class action lawsuit. And that is significant for a couple reasons. One is the class action status brings with it a whole nother level of seriousness, and for U.S. soccer, potential trouble, financial trouble, because the court to rule as a to allow this to proceed as a class action means that the court is already seeing something off, and that abnormality is leaning in the favor of the U.S. women's national team. So that's the first thing. The second piece of this is that this could be very, very bad news financially for the Federation. It is troubling because instead of the Federation treating this U.S. women's national team and its members, its players, as the same level of their male counterparts, and paying them proper wages, now they're exposing the Federation to damages beyond just recourse of, you know, making things equal over that time period. They're opening themselves up to damages. It's very, very troubling. And this whole thing could have been avoided. But you have to understand a couple things. There has been anyone that's been around the top levels of U.S. soccer over the years has probably heard some of the chauvinistic comments and attitudes from the leaders in charge. Everything from, like, they should only get paid for, you know, winning matches against top 15 countries. You know, it's women's soccer, it's not men's soccer. There's been all kinds of insinuations from leadership, and this goes all the way up to the presidential level. Comments in the past of past presidents and so forth at that level have been kind of dismissive towards women's soccer, and you've seen it in the policies and the way that they've treated the women's national team. Actions speak louder than words. So whenever you say this is, you know, we don't mean to be that way, that wasn't our intention, your actions don't line up with that. And that's what matters at the end of the day. Not what you want everyone to believe, but what is actually happening. This is the same problem Major League Soccer has as well. They do a lot of this spin about, you know, we're doing X, but really they're not. They're just wanting you to believe something because they're not living up to the hype. And this is the situation with U.S. soccer. They're not living up to their duties. They, you know, even in Carlos Cordero's letter a few months ago about this whole thing, you know, talking about how the Federation has paid or whatever, that is so disingenuous. And the fact that you have, you know, some athlete council members like Stu Holden, for example, defending Carlos Cordero in decisions and in things is just laughable. It's you got to look at actions. What is really going on? And in the letter, he didn't defend the women's national team. He defended the Federation. And he didn't admit to the fact that what the court has already seen, they have not even gone through all of the discovery for the trial, just enough to get into class action status. And they're already seeing issues with the way the pay inequity, the treatment inequity, and all those aspects. It doesn't take much to see that. And this is the problem, this dismissive attitude, defensive attitude, rather than an accountability attitude, a responsibility attitude. And that's the difference with the Federation. Those at the top levels of the Federation don't view their job as much about stewardship, which if you view your role, whether that's, you know, leading a club or leading a federation or leading, you know, a business or an organization, if you don't view your job from a stewardship perspective, it's very hard to have responsibility and accountability. This stewardship mentality is necessary to get your ideas, your ideals, and your principles in line. Instead, what leadership positions have turned into are power plays. What's in it for me? Let me defend mine. I want access to the table. It's about me. It's centered on me, not on those I'm leading, those I'm in charge of serving. Hence the stewardship mentality. So this U.S. women's national team class action status is very, very important. All of that to say that this entire thing began not with this U.S. women's national team. And I don't want to lose this. This is a really, really important point. Often the first ones through the fire are the ones that get burned the most. The ones that take the arrows. They lead the charge. The U.S. women's national team is a collective in this lawsuit. They weren't the first. They may get the most attention right now, and they may get the most glory right now, but the first one to lead the charge, to take the hits, the disparaging comments, being laughed at, scoffed at, dismissed, made fun of, humiliated. And I don't use those words because I assume this might have happened or someone told me something. I saw these personally. The one who took all of that first was Hope Solo. She began this fight. She took it to the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee. She's also gone through with a lawsuit herself, who's paved the way before this U.S. women's national team fight ever began. She deserves recognition. She deserves our respect for standing up alone. It's easy to bundle up together, class action, let's wrap our arms and stand unified. That way, if we do that, then, you know, we're in less risk of getting individually shut out, which the Federation is known for doing, freezing you out of the national team programs. It happens at the senior level. It happens in the youth levels. But Hope Solo went alone. The U.S. women's national team at the time were not there. She fought anyway. So kudos to Hope Solo, as well as to all the U.S. women's national team players. This is a fight worth having. It is something the Federation needs to be called to task for. One of many issues. And those defending status quo, thinking that you're doing American soccer a favor, if that is your, in fact, your mentality, you're mistaken. Instead, what really, really needs to happen, is the Federation to be taken to task. And it looks like they will. And that may be short-term pain, but I prefer short-term pain for a correction so we can have long-term gain. Our sponsor this half hour is Ductic Brand, DUKTIG brand.com, and we are big fans of theirs. It's getting cold. They've got winter gear. If you haven't checked it out, go to ducticbrand.com and use promo code DWSHOW to get 10% off of your order. Again, that is ducticbrand.com, DWSHOW, to get 10% off of your order. We'll be right back with Abram Chamberlain of AFC Mobile with the news of them moving from the GCPL to the NPSL breaking yesterday. So stay tuned for that. And a little bit later in the show, we're also trying to get on Gerardo Flores of the Gulf Coast Rangers, who are in the GCPL, and see their outlook on the future going forward. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. Into this show. Thanks for tuning in this morning. We are joined by Abram Chamberlain. He is the president of AFC Mobile. Abram, welcome to the show. How are you this morning?
I am tired, as always, and I am sort of like overwhelmed with everything that sort of happened in the last 24 hours, or at least with the announcement of what's happened.
So I want to get into that. We wanted to have you on the show to kind of stop in and address the news that broke yesterday. Rumors swirled last week. I was in Amsterdam last week and started getting blown up with messages about a possible seismic shift along the Gulf Coast. It was announced officially yesterday, four clubs from the GCPL moving their first teams to the NPSL. Those are Port City in the Gulfport Biloxi area, AFC Mobile and Pensacola FC, as well as Tallahassee SC. So right along Interstate 10, filling in the gaps between Jacksonville and New Orleans, right all along Interstate 10. So, so the news breaks yesterday. First, before we kind of get into that news as it was announced, I want to kind of rewind for a moment. How did this all come about? What is the origin of this move, and why did you, as AFC Mobile, feel like this was a good move for the club?
A lot of questions. So let's sort of start with really the origin of AFC Mobile and sort of what we had always intended on doing. Is we always wanted to be in some sort of national league. We always wanted to have some sort of option to qualify automatically to U.S. Open Cup proper. And I would actually defer to probably Sean Landry, who was our CFO. He's sort of been the driving force behind this. I know we've had a relationship with Kenny Farrell, chairman of the NPSL, as well as the head coach of the New Orleans Jesters, since 2000. It must have been, what are we in? We're 19, 18. So 2017, I know we had a friendly with them. It's just really, I'm still at the point where this is all kind of hitting us at once. So I think I don't want to say it goes back quite that far, but I know that midway, a little bit after the season, and maybe even been in mid-October, Sean sort of came to us with this idea of now might be a good time to make this move from GCPL to the NPSL. And none of us sort of took this as an actual possibility, because the honest truth is, really, since we were, even before we fielded a team, if you go back to 2015, 2016, people immediately were like, oh, well, AFC Mobile is going to be in NPSL, or AFC Mobile is going to be in what was then the PDL. I think they're like USL 2 now. I can't remember. I think USL 2, right? That's the amateur one. And so I guess this was sort of after that last year that we just had, where we had a very successful year in GCPL. It just kind of seemed like the right time to make the move for us. We had that good season. We were able to try some things out, which we weren't able to try before, as far as hosting players, as far as some of the promotions we were able to run. And then just sort of everything kind of fell into place. I want to say mid-October. I don't think it went back as far as September. But it just now just seemed like the right time. And I know for us, our goal has always been to bring the highest level of soccer possible to Mobile. And at this moment, it seems like NPSL is the highest level we're able to get to the city.
So in terms of first the timeline, who made the approach to AFC Mobile? Was it from Kenny? Where did that approach, that conversation begin in terms of, you know, this conversation or idea of looking at making a jump to the NPSL?
What if I told you? I don't know. That's sort of, I keep feeling like I'm pushing it off onto Sean. I know that Sean was approached. I'm not sure if that was by Kenny or whom exactly that was from, but it was definitely a conversation had between Sean and the people at NPSL.
And then in terms of that approach, there's, you know, typically, when you're joining the NPSL, there is an expansion fee and then an annual fee. Different stories were circulating last week about that conversation. Are you aware of that element for AFC Mobile? Were you guys able to get in without an expansion fee, or is that part of something you're having to come up with? What has that process been like?
I remember seeing that when, it must have been October, now that I'm thinking about it, because I think it was October where the first story came out, and they said that, if I recall correctly what the tweet said, it was something along the lines of AFC Mobile, or not AFC Mobile, but GCPL teams getting in for free. I can't remember exactly what the comment was. I can tell you, I can't give you an exact number. Again, I'm not the money guy. It's not free. It's just sort of, you know, that sort of is what American soccer is not a free system, not a merit-based system. So it's just sort of, yeah, there is definitely money going to be coming out of AFC Mobile's pockets to pay this.
And is that fee closer to the annual dues, or do you know if that's annual dues plus some type of an expansion fee?
I know it's definitely the annual fees, and I know that there is definitely part of the expansion fee coming up as well.
So in terms of the NPSL, in the past, they have operated with territorial rights. This is a closed system league like every other league in this country. And so some leagues have chosen to have territorial rights. Other leagues haven't. I know at the recent AGM of the GCPL of this past season, that was a topic of conversation at the GCPL AGM about having territorial rights versus not having territorial rights. Were you guys able to be granted some type of territorial exclusivity with the NPSL, or is it open season for applicants in terms of geography? Where did that conversation or negotiation land for you guys?
This, again, that's a question that I wish I knew the answer to. I know that the AOM, I believe it's this, actually, I know it's this upcoming weekend. That's something that would probably be better answered once we were through that.
So looking at the NPSL versus the GCPL, you voiced a view or an opinion that you think that is a higher level than the GCPL. What are the advantages that you guys looked at when you were making these evaluations of, do we stay in the GCPL for a season or two longer versus making the jump with the first team to the NPSL? What were the advantages that you saw as, hey, these things outweigh any potential risks? What did you think you were going to get out of this move?
I think the biggest thing, and I sort of alluded to it earlier, is that opportunity to play in the U.S. Open Cup. It's a little bit easier to qualify for U.S. Open Cup out of the NPSL than it would be out of the GCPL. And that was one of the big changes for us as well. I know that I'm aware, because we did some of the player recruitment last year, and we were told specifically by certain coaches at certain colleges that they would be willing to send a player to play in the NPSL, but they were not willing to send a player to play in the GCPL, which we found frustrating, I guess would be the best way to put it. So I guess sort of that national name recognition, whereas people still look at GCPL fairly or unfairly as a regional league. I mean, in theory, it is still very much a regional league. It's a very good regional league. It's probably one of the top, if not the top regional league in the country. And the quality, I would say, is, especially with some of the upper level teams, is as good, if not better, than some of the NPSL or even UPSL teams. But it's that I guess notoriety would be a good word to say, and that sort of easier path into the U.S. Open Cup for us, I don't know, were two of the big things that we took into account on making this change.
Do you think that you guys are going to have an easier chance of drawing larger crowds and sponsors, more sponsors?
I think sponsorship-wise, it may be a little bit easier. I'm not sure as far as crowds go, because I kind of feel it's that, and I'm going to totally bite this phrase from Detroit, which is that it's club over league. I think no matter what league we played in, it's going to be our sort of our passionate group. And I don't think that many of them are going to be, you know, people are obviously excited about the idea of being an NPSL, about the idea to potentially go play a team outside of our geographic footprint. But the truth of the matter is it's club over league, and people are going to show up for GCPL. People are going to show up for NPSL. If we were in USL 2, if we were in the South Alabama Soccer League, well, maybe not if we're in South Alabama Soccer Association, but as long as we're in these leagues, these regional leagues, or even national leagues, as the case is now, I think people are going to come out. I don't know if it'll draw a bigger crowd. I do think that it will definitely be more attracted to sponsors when they hear that idea of it being national as compared to regional.
In terms of the move, this move did not happen in isolation. As I mentioned at the very top of this, you're making the move, Port City, Pensacola, as well as Tallahassee, all four members of the GCPL Eastern Conference from the 2019 season, making this move and then being bookended on the east on Interstate 10 with Jacksonville and on the west off of Interstate 10 with the New Orleans Jesters. In terms of, you know, improving the quality of play or, you know, access to quote unquote higher level soccer, do you guys worry that, you know, you're basically playing the GCPL East except under a new name with two new teams? Instead of having the Gulf Coast Rangers and Hattiesburg in the mix, you're replacing those with the Jesters and Armada. Do you view that as any potential downside to this move, that it's not AFC moving into a new conference with, say, four or five new opponents? Or do you think that familiarity and that proximity in terms of geography will help continue to build on the progress you guys made in the GCPL East over the last few years?
I think that actually is, I know for a fact, a conversation that we did have, which is, you know, what is there a big gain on doing this? And to me, at least, it feels like it is. I think when you add an Armada and you add a Jesters, you're adding two known-ish teams. Or, you know, I know them because I'm a non-league soccer nerd. I'm sure you know them because you're kind of the same thing. But these are teams that people know. People are aware of Robert Palmer. People are aware of Kenny Farrell. People understand what those teams are about. And then when you get to add those two teams, in addition to keeping the rivalries that you've already forged with Port City, or the history that we have with Pensacola, or what Tallahassee did in a single year in the GCPL, and what we sort of did with them, and we played them twice to two draws, a 0-0 and a 2-2, both of them very exciting, big games. You get to continue building that legacy with those teams, in addition to adding two, I don't want to say stalwarts, but they really are. They're really, and that's the word that they kept using over and over again, is these NPSL stalwarts. The Jesters are a huge club in my mind. The Armada are, you know, a former NASL club now playing in NPSL. Ambitions, I would assume, to push themselves to a higher level. So when you get to go and keep who you've played for the last few years and continue to build those rivalries, we get to continue the Forgotten Coast Cup. We get to continue playing Pensacola. We get to continue playing Tallahassee. And then we add those other two teams. I don't think there's really a downside to it.
There was a lot of consternation when news started to be leaked last week. No teams at the time were named, but just said GCPL East, and people started connecting the dots. AFC Mobile has been kind of the GCPL, poster child of success off the field in terms of attendance and drawing crowds and building excitement, connecting with local media in much the same way Chattanooga and Detroit have served that role for the NPSL over the years. And so obviously AFC Mobile was one of those clubs highly speculated about last week. And in that speculation, I was seeing a lot of consternation and, you know, skepticism on the process. Did you feel like anything in this process was underhanded or, for the lack of a better descriptive word, dirty? Or did you just feel like this is one of those situations where the U.S. soccer system is what it is, and we were just, you know, presented with an option, an opportunity that we didn't think we would be able to attain, and so we said, why not? Let's take it.
I think it's very much the latter as compared to the former, which is, it always seems worse than it is. I don't think there was anything, in my opinion, dirty or underhanded about it. I know I tried to keep in constant contact with the people at GCPL. I know they kept in constant contact with us. I would assume that the other teams did as well, but I don't really have insights into their boards. But I would imagine, you know, there was never a time where I felt like we were necessarily being, I think the word poached has been used, actually poached is not the one. Maybe it was pilfered, stolen. I don't know the way, the words that have been sort of tossed. I feel it was a fairly open process. I feel this just sort of is what it is when we're in a system that's based on promotion as in selling yourself as compared to promotion in sporting merit. This just kind of is what it is. You can blame the USSF, you can blame the leagues, you can blame 1,000 different peoples, but unfortunately this is just the way American soccer is set up.
Looking at where you guys are in terms of making preparations for next year moving forward, the NPSL has announced extended season options. In the press release, it looks like you guys are looking only at the summer session. You guys played a friendly before this year's GCPL season against Chattanooga, and it was a struggle. Do you guys feel like having access now to be in the NPSL in an official way, not just playing a friendly, will help you draw enough talent to overcome that deficiency as you witnessed in Chattanooga? Or you know, do you feel like it's going to be some growing pains here in this first season in the NPSL?
I think that with our history of what we have shown so far, and with the positivity that a lot of the players who came, who were recruited, who weren't there at that game, came in and were able to now spread to their other players, other friends who are playing in these summer leagues, I think we'll be able to cover that deficiency relatively quickly, actually. Now, I'm not saying we're going to be competing for an NPSL national championship in the first year, because there's obviously going to be some growing pains, because thus is the nature of the sporting business. But I do think that we'll be able to field a competitive team in the first year. I believe we should be competing for a playoff spot. And we'll just sort of see how we go from there. I know Steve Wazorek was able to provide us with a much more competitive team than we had ever previously had in GCPL. And now is he going to be able to do that? I would think so. I have a lot of faith in Steve and what he did for us last year. And I have a lot of faith in Steve as to what he could do for us, because there were several players who Steve did go after last year to try to get come in GCPL that were difference makers for NPSL teams. I don't really want to put any names out. Maybe we'll talk a little bit off the air. But there are some players that he went after who were very excited to play for ASC Mobile, who were very excited to come play for us in the GCPL, and then were sort of persuaded to, well, why don't you go play in NPSL? So I have a huge amount of faith in Steve and the rest of his technical staff to field a competitive team next year.
In looking at where this is in terms of this move, one of the things that the NPSL's recently talked about is the extended season option. You talked previously about your ambition to bring the highest level of soccer to Mobile as possible. Do you think in the future you guys would entertain going longer than just that summer session if maybe some of the other teams around you that are in the NPSL would be looking at the same option? Would that be something you guys would consider?
I think it's something that is, get ready for the most political answer ever, I believe that's something that's not off the table. I know that's something we are at least internally discussing, and it's going to be sort of how are we able to handle the summer season as we sort of the step up in competition, the step up in everything with NPSL, and are we then able to transition that from being a summer league into playing a longer season?
Fair enough. Well, Abram, look, I really appreciate you coming on. The news breaking yesterday about the club's move to the NPSL. Look forward to having you back on when there's more news, maybe after you guys have the AGM for the NPSL coming up. You'll have some other things sorted out. But appreciate you shedding some light on some of the process as we discuss. It's been a lot of speculation and kudos to you to come on and talk about some of that from the AFC Mobile perspective. So appreciate it. How can people follow the club on social media?
So we are on pretty much every social media platform at AFC Mobile, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Snapchat, which we never use, on Facebook, AFCMobile.net. What am I missing? You know, that's the kind of the big ones. Basically, if you search AFC Mobile on any social media platform, I'm pretty sure we're on LinkedIn too. You can find us, follow us, get updates, get all sorts of news.
Well, Abram, thanks for the time. Appreciate it. Good luck, and we'll be watching and seeing the progress. So thanks for joining the show again.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. That is Abram Chamberlain, the president of AFC Mobile. Check them out on those social media platforms to get more news from the club. We'll be right back after this.
No one, no man, no woman, no child should ever have to drink green water with bugs, with algae, with disease in it. Bad water and a lack of toilets kills more people than all the wars in the world. We know how to bring clean drinking water right now to every single person on earth. And when you can bring water into communities, it truly transforms them. It changes everything. Right? You could know that you'd made a difference. You could know that you had truly impacted the life of a family, of a community, of a region. There was either clean water or there wasn't. We believe in a world where every single person has clean and safe water to drink, and we will continue fighting until that happens.
Welcome back into the show. Thanks for tuning in on this Wednesday, November the 13th. We are pleased to be joined as well today by Gerardo Flores. G, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Good, man. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
I'm good.
Thanks for coming on. Had a chat with Abram Chamberlain, the president of AFC Mobile, talking about their move with their first team to a new NPSL kind of Gulf Coast conference set up with the NPSL with Jacksonville all the way on the east on I-10, New Orleans Jesters all the way on the west on I-10, and bringing in four members of the GCPL Eastern Conference first teams to fill out the middle of that Gulf Coast Conference on I-10 with Tallahassee, Pensacola, AFC Mobile, and Port City, all leaving the GCPL with their first teams to go into the NPSL, into this new setup. From a Gulf Coast Rangers perspective, where does that leave you guys?
Right now, I think it just leaves us waiting to see the direction of GCPL and what they'll put together. But for us, you know, the NPSL attractiveness and the hype was never something that lured us or attracted us. So it was never something that we were considering or thought about. We actually thought that what GCPL was doing and the teams that were popping up here along the I-10 and along our area, we thought it was great. We thought it was exactly what this area needed, and if anything, exciting for that local community growth of soccer, grassroots non-league soccer was happening. So where's the leave us? We're just going to wait and see. But at the end of the day, GCPL fits our bill. GCPL serves us for what we needed, and we want to stick with GCPL. We want to grow the game on a local community level. That's what we want to do. So
how does the GCPL fit what excuse me, what Gulf Coast Rangers are trying to do. What is it that you're trying to do, and why do you feel like the GCPL is the right fit for Gulf Coast Rangers?
Well, for us, you know, we're in it for the entire pathway of player development. So for us having a men's and women's team, we're going into our third year. So second year last season, this past summer, second season of being in it. It was just to cap off what we're doing at the youth level. So we wanted to have the men's and women's teams that the players can see themselves training in those environments, trying to reach those levels of play. So that's why GCPL, I mean, we're not in the game of, you know, the like I said, hype and lights and, you know, chasing fans in the stands. It's not really, I mean, we love the idea of community coming to support, get behind us. But for us, the GCPL was regional soccer, local soccer, community soccer, where I strongly, passionately believe that's where soccer is going to change in this country, will be in the local communities, you know, not chasing a national recognition or notoriety that some others chase.
So looking at kind of the aftermath of the GCPL, if you look at the map, it looks like a bomb went off along I-10 from it's like Hurricane NPSL landed right up Mobile Bay, and with it in its wake wiped out Tallahassee through Port City. In regards to looking at the aftermath, what do you hope to see in terms of the GCPL East, because as it stands right now, officially, there's you guys and there's Hattiesburg, talks of Montgomery, I believe, joining as well. Do you see anything else? Have you heard anything else in terms of possibilities of any additional teams to kind of round out an Eastern Conference, or is that going to be more travel for you guys into Mississippi and Louisiana?
Maybe. I mean, I'm looking at it, you know, because we also manage the WPSL team. So I'm looking at it that it might end up looking like that. You know, the first season WPSL for the women's, we had to go to Baton Rouge, Birmingham, Jackson, Mississippi, and then Pensacola. So I imagine that this might end up looking like it. It doesn't have that local taste or feel of going across the bay or going down the road, down the I-10. So you definitely lose something. But Daniel, for us, I'm very familiar with the NPSL PDL model. I was a part of the first 2009 Jesters team, so I know what it looks like. And for the longest time that I've been doing club, not longest time, so I say, you know, the 8 years that I've been involved in youth club, I've had phone calls with the PDL guys, the USL guys, when they were chasing, you know, getting teams down here in the area before AFC. But bottom line for us, like we couldn't imagine paying at the time. It was like $50,000 to join PDL, or, you know, and then they would give you a 50% off or something like that to get you involved. NPSL, I don't know what it was. I think it was 15 grand to join the NPSL. But that's for us. It's just not what we're in it for. We never wanted to pay a fee to enter this league or this level to give us like some notoriety. I think it's crazy. I think it's ludicrous that people think that that's the way of building community soccer. Pay your way up. None of those three teams, besides Port City, winning last season. What was it? The year before, right? Is that what they won?
Yeah, they won the year before.
Yeah. I mean, what have they done? What have they done to just go pay a fee to enter a so-called higher level? It's not a higher level. People want to sell you the same stuff. Sure, they got good players and good teams. It's the same league. It's not what's it called? Not recognized by U.S. soccer. U.S. soccer considered the fourth division, right? But not recognized by U.S. soccer as part of their pathway. I mean, what are they paying for the same thing but different colors and some new letters? And the shame is, what annoys me the most, Daniel, is, sorry for any noise in the background. The shame is that what's sold to other people, that idea that it's a higher level or that idea that it's better. And people are going to believe it. People are going to buy it, and, you know, so be it. So it's a shame, but it just wasn't what we were after. It's just not what we're about.
obviously, the dysfunctional U.S. soccer system does not have sporting merit and promotion and relegation requirements of FIFA. So when we look at the landscape and we bring it down to the microcosm this of local, you know, I would look at a region being, you know, New Orleans over to, you know, to say Tallahassee, right, as kind of a pretty good, you know, defining parameter of a local region along the Gulf Coast for Gulf Coast Rangers. Losing those four teams with their first teams to the NPSL, one of the things that has been a part of the NPSL in the past, and I asked this to Abram, he didn't have an answer, and we're hoping to follow up and be able to get this answer. But in the past, the NPSL has implemented geographic boundaries, territories. Are you a little concerned that you guys will get effectively locked out of the NPSL going forward?
No. Which, by the way, I think, AFC Mobile and I think Port City sat at our meetings and hate to blast them, but they, you know, this idea of protected limits or can't have a team in your neighborhood or your area, absolute pathetic. Like, get over yourselves. The idea that you can't have a team in your neighborhood to compete with you, to be fair, like, protecting yourself of what? Of soccer? Of being able to produce a good soccer team? This is what I think Abram used, promoting promotion by selling yourselves. So that's what we've gotten to. So there's a team across the road that's just going to sell themselves better because they got a few more people put more pennies in your pocket. So they're going to go sell themselves better regardless of the soccer that they provide. And the unfortunate piece is that the people that don't know any better, they go in the stands because the colors are bright and the noise is loud. They're going to go ahead and just buy it when they're not paying attention to the soccer that's being played. AFC Mobile has done nothing in 3 years to deserve promoting, quote unquote, themselves into the next league. Absolute nonsense. So this protecting themselves, or NPSL wants to protect teams, I think they're stifling the growth of soccer. What I actually hope happens, Daniel, is I hope another team in Mobile pops up. I hope another team in Mobile pops up in the GCPL. And I hope another team pops up along the Gulf Coast that wants to join the GCPL, that shows a little bit of long-term view rather than short-term success. I hate this idea of this word, use history. These guys have been around for 3 or 4 years, Daniel. What are they talking about history? History is actual clubs that we look at and admire and follow on the European level. History. What are they talking about? The 3 years, like, and they're talking about these cups like as if they've been around for decades. You there? Sorry.
I'm here, man. I'm just listening. So I just got back Monday night from a week in Amsterdam. And one of the things that I observed while I was there, everyone, when they think of Amsterdam, they think of Ajax, right? And it is the quintessential Dutch club. It is the biggest club in Ajax and in all of the Netherlands. And you know, people think Amsterdam, they think Ajax, but they don't actually know the landscape of soccer in the city of Amsterdam.
Correct.
While I was there, I was at a local club. They have three fields. They have a clubhouse, locker rooms. At the same complex, there's like 3, 4, 5, 6 other clubs with the same setup, all in the same park.
Yeah.
And then you go over 5 minutes away and there's another complex with another 8, 10, 12 fields with 4 or 5 different clubs, clubhouses, etc. They all compete, right, you know, in the Dutch pyramid. Yeah. Some at the same level, some are at different levels, etc. Some have stands, some have standing only areas, etc. Right. But you have multiple clubs right on, not just in the same city, but in the same park. when I look at the growth of the game there, the underpinnings of Ajax is that scene. And you see that repeated throughout Europe. You see clubs, multiple clubs in an area, a neighborhood or a community. And then what you see on TV with Chelsea or a Liverpool or an Ajax or a Barcelona have been the growth over time, organically, of a club becoming big, but their roots, their origin story was growing out of, you know, the city, to become a city club, not just a neighborhood club, but it was, yeah, it was a growth up the pyramid that kind of helped spur that on. So when you look at the landscape of the GCPL and you look at the landscape of regional soccer, and you talk about, like, you would like to see another team pop up in Mobile and some of these other places, how important is it for leagues like the GCPL in this country to get replicated across the country, to have kind of incubators for those types of clubs to pop up? Do you think do you think we need to see more GCPL like leagues around the country?
For sure. That I think should be where the support is. That's where I think the focus and the energy should go. So completely realigning our soccer views and energy into what, obviously, we want to see the national team do well on the men's side. The women's side, obviously, they are what they are and they're doing what they're doing. But we want to see ourselves grow as a country. That's all good, the macro, right? But to do well, we have to get into the nitty-gritty of our neighborhoods, and we need to grow the game in small town. For me, small town Alabama, this is happening, Daniel. Like, you know better than I do. This is happening a lot around the country, and you know, in small town New Jersey, or you know, in Connecticut or West Coast, whatever. It is happening. But the fact that we're talking about it here in small town Alabama is exciting and cool. But the problem is that, to the point of this whole conversation, is that you have people chasing national recognition. You have people chasing national recognition. I think Abram Hughes, and I hate to, again, he's speaking for maybe some of his guys at AFC Mobile, it was an easier way to get into the U.S. Cup. So that sums it up. And if that's what Pensacola and Port City, AFC, Tallahassee, if that's what they were in it for, then we're losing. We're losing as a whole. Because it's funny, right? This morning, before I even opened up your call or your interview, there was a tweet by a guy who talks about passion. Comes from the Latin word petty, which means to suffer. There's no suffering. Like, these guys, using the words of passion, rivalry, and history, you've not suffered. What have you suffered? You paid a bill to enter a league to make it easier to enter another level of play. So we lost as a soccer country. We lost because there is no suffering. We think history is 3 years in a local league when other countries or other levels of play show that it is decades of suffering. You know, look anywhere and soccer first country. So yeah, it's upsetting because on the national scale we talk about things to improve, but really, Daniel, it's improving ourselves on the local level.
Yeah, totally. I mean, when I look at the landscape of the system on a macro level, structure system, and I put out a series of tweets yesterday talking a little bit about this. It is really easy to get caught up in blaming clubs and blaming leagues, but the ultimate responsibility, kind of the whole Truman mantra of the buck stops here, is the U.S. Soccer Federation not doing its job to promote the game, to set up and structure the game, to connect the leagues into a tiered hierarchy structure and system of leagues, so that you know, if you are having success, you're moving yourself up through primarily sporting merit. In the absence of that, the only way to grow your club is to do what Abram talked about, what you've referenced, which is to pay the bill, and it's to you know, pay a higher fee to go up to a higher league. Which is essentially, you know, breaking the FIFA code for how teams should enter leagues, which goes back to the macro point of U.S. soccer failing to do its job when it comes to structure and system. And what we saw yesterday in the announcement of the four teams leaving the GCPL Eastern Conference and going to the NPSL is another example of what is happening consistently throughout the country. MLS taking from USL, USL taking from NISA, NISA taking from NPSL, etc., so on and so forth, all the way up and down everywhere across the country, because we don't have a unified structure and system, so it breeds this dysfunction. We get the results because of the system, not in spite of it. So
Agreed, Daniel, agreed to that. But in the same breath, I think that we also have responsibility if we're in the local game, if we're in the small level or lower level game, then I think it's we some of us talk out both sides of our mouths. We say that we want to reach a certain level, and that we want to do, you know, and we buy into this idea of promotion relegation, and we retweet it, and we do all this, and we talk the big game, but then we go and we do the other thing that just is against it. And we want to have passionate fans when really it's just about selling it to people that just want to buy the hype, you know. So we almost want one thing and then do another. As I think we have, for sure, I'm with you on the national scale. We need more, better leadership, more responsibility, etc. But we also need people at the lower levels to say, no, you know what? We're gonna make GCPL, for our case, the best league in the country. And we're gonna make noise about it. And you know what? We're gonna win it. And if we win it, then we're gonna make noise, and someone's gonna reach out to us, and we're gonna go play at a higher level. We're gonna walk it. We're gonna win it. But we don't. We don't do that. We think that 3 years is long, or 4 or 5 years is long, and we're just gonna go, you know, pay our ways in. I think the letters, the colors, the noise ends up capturing people's attention. I know a lot of people are all like, hey, congrats. They're going to the same league, Daniel. You know that. They're going to the same thing. They're going to play the same amount of games, or same amount. They might travel a little bit further. And, you know, New Orleans Jesters, I think Abram called them a big club. A what? A big club. New Orleans Jesters. No, they're not. So I just think we've got it all mixed up, man, and we're selling stuff that's not true. So that's what bothers me the most.
Last question here. I want to pick up on something you just said. If you believe principally in the idea of promotion and relegation, and you wanted to walk that out, you wanted to build the league and build your club within the league, if you were to win the GCPL as a club, even though there is no quote unquote promotion relegation, if you won it, at that point, would you look at a different league for your club to go, okay, we've won the league, now we're going to look at this kind of a self promotion relegation setup in terms of moving the club up? Or, you know, are you looking at clubs needing to stay with their league and kind of forcing promotion and relegation by, you know, working to unite and connect the leagues from existing positions and then starting the promotion and relegation?
Yeah, I think what you said there, working with the league leaders and saying, right, you know, we've, let me use example of the WPSL, the women's Pensacola. I mean, they've got the talented players coming in from all over the country. One girl was playing over with the Nigerian or Ghanaian national team. They come in, and, you know, what good is it for them to be playing at the WPSL level when they've gone and won on the national level of WPSL? I think the conversation should, I don't know if it has, you know, be, you know, how do we get an NWSL team down there to where they can compete at that level? I think you gotta look at those those things, if you do end up winning it, what is next for your team, if there is? Now, it also has to make sense financially, because I don't know, NPSL or you know, what used to be PDL, and you know, we would have to fly or travel hours away for a game. You know, if that's what your budget allows you, you know, 150 on a summer league, I just don't, for me, I don't know if that makes, for us, it wouldn't make sense to go and play on a league that's financially going to hurt our youth. So if we were, to your question, if we were to win the GCPL, we would probably start a conversation of, is there a need and or a necessity to go and compete at a higher level? But then the higher level is basically offering the same product, summer league, higher expenses, same amount of time. You know, it's just right now, it just, the whole system just doesn't suit us. So that's why GCPL and regional leagues like that are important, are so important. So I hope to double down on GCPL. I hope GCPL keeps growing. Hope other regional leagues look at them and keep growing and not look at the easy route to get into the U.S. Open Cup. How cool. The story gets better the harder it gets. So teams that grind out from a regional league all the way through U.S. Cup, that's a story. Not paying your way in to make an easier route.
I hear you, man. Well, thanks for coming on the show today. Thanks for giving us your thoughts on the news that broke yesterday. I know it's created a little bit of topsy-turvy, unknown questions, etc. Unfortunately, this repeats all over the country. But it's, you know, Hurricane NPSL hit the Gulf Coast yesterday and left in its wake the GCPL Eastern Conference. And we'll see where the pieces end up over the next few months. So best of luck to you. And thanks for coming on the show again.
Take care, man.
Thank you. That is Gerardo Flores. He is the director of coaching and one of the heads leaders of the Gulf Coast Rangers Football Club, located in the same metro area as AFC Mobile that just left for the NPSL. So thanks to Abram, thanks to G for coming on the show today, kind of giving their thoughts on the news from yesterday. As always, you can watch the show on facebook.com/WRKMN, at danielworkman.com, and you can catch me on Twitter or Instagram @DanielWorkman. Thanks for watching. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.